Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Boy. I would say I'm packing for Chicago, but I'm not. I'm there for a day. I'm going to put like some underwear and a shirt in my backpack. And just, I think I'm literally bringing a backpack because it's that short a trip.
If you can get away with it.
Yeah.
It's good. So it's nice to be able to fit all that stuff in a single bag.
Yeah. Well, I'm
just.
Yeah,
not worry about it.
Yeah, well, exactly. I gotta go to a hotel and then I just check out immediately and go to the Apple event and then I go record a podcast and then I go to the airport basically. So I'm not hanging around in any one location. So I was actually late to doing this because I was rounding up some links.
Yes, yes, I saw the link dump for the morning.
I decided. To try to like set the stage for next week by looking at some other reports, and then I realized Mark Gurman also did this and he wrote a story with some reports in it too, so kind of put it all together because there's the speculation stuff, which is there's stuff out in the water about what Apple's going to do, and then there's like our speculation that we do about like, well, they could do this or they could do that. That is not based on sources or anything beyond what's out there in the water. And then, you know, Gurman came in today, Mark Gurman at Bloomberg, and said, no, that low cost iPad update is happening. And I found a Mac Rumors story from last month that says and there's actually a DigiTimes report from December that said that it might be as cheap as $259 for the entry level iPad, which that, I kind of don't believe that because I never believe that Apple will be cheaper than, right? My whole philosophy is imagine a price and then add $50 to it.
Sure. Yeah. But there's always a question, too, of whether that's a price for the education market or a price for consumers. And like we've talked about before, supply chain stuff, prices are very unreliable in terms of those reports,
right? Because that all comes from the inside. Like Apple decides what they want to price it. The factory does not.
So, for example, you know, if you were looking, you know, disassembling an iPad and looking at all the materials that went into it and thinking like, yeah, it probably costs them, you know, $250 to buy this. Let's throw a $9 markup on that and call it a day. That, you know, obviously isn't a super reliable way to look at pricing, but. Given that the current price of the low-end iPad is, what, $329? A $299 iPad seems pretty reasonable.
I think the education price is $299. But yeah, lower price is good. The one that I keep holding out for is Apple Pencil support. And I know that's an iPad Pro feature up to now, but like if they could get Apple Pencil support in there, a case for would be, yes, it's going to cost more, but it's going to be on every, every classroom, right?
Yeah, it costs more, but you can sell more pencils.
Yeah.
$100 a pencil, that's not nothing. And I think it would help adoption too, because I think the pencil is a cool device and it's interesting. You know, we've seen a lot of demonstrations of how it works for artists. And some, you know, I use it a little bit for note taking or other just sort of freeform stuff. I'm not an artist in the least, but like ideas and planning and drawing sketches and stuff like that of like, you know, outlines, that kind of stuff. And I feel like, you know, between that and sort of annotation stuff, there's a big market for that in education more than any other niche aside from sort of creative artists. And I don't think, I would be curious to know how well the pencil actually does, because I don't think that everybody who buys, certainly not everybody who buys an iPad Pro is buying an Apple Pencil, but I would imagine it's actually, I think it's a smaller percent. I think it's less than half.
Yeah. I was struck by Craig Hockenberry's piece, which actually he wrote last year, but was relinked this year. This week because Linea, the Icon Factory's drawing app, got a major update and is now called Linea Sketch. But it's, he's not an artist, although he does design stuff. And he says that it's basically replaced, his iPad has replaced his sketchbook that he kept on his desk to take notes and sketch things out, because, you know, now he can do that with layers and stuff that paper is hard. Paper doesn't do as well. And I thought about that, and I thought, like, there are just lots of applications for having the ability to write or draw on an iPad. It's not for everybody. It's not for me, honestly. But I'm intrigued by that idea. And yeah, the argument would be the extra cost that goes into the iPad, cheap iPad. You're going to make it up in pencils and also in flexibility, and it's going to drive sales of drawing apps and stuff, which is good for the platform. And there's lots of reasons to get it down there. Whether there'll be a new pencil is the other question. Like, or will they discount the old pencil for use in schools? And I don't know. The other thing Gurman says is, and this I think is a new report for him, but I'm not 100% because I don't have every rumor tracked. But he says that a new cheaper MacBook laptop is in the works and likely destined to replace the MacBook Air at a price less than $1,000. So that is a big report that Apple is absolutely working on a cheaper version of the MacBook that would replace the Air and would be a sub 1,001. But he says it probably won't be ready in time for next week. So good, interesting news. At the same time, I would, you know, if it's not ready to go, they can't announce it really. But at the same time, it seems thematically like it would be the perfect time to announce it.
It's a weird... We've talked about it before because of the rumors of the MacBook Air getting a refresh.
Right. Which could be wrong, right? Like, it could be that whole game of telephone that we talk about.
Yes. This could be both of those stories. This could be neither of those stories. This could be some combination of elements from these stories. It certainly seems, you know, there's no arguing over the fact that Apple, you know, needs a new sub $1,000 laptop in some form, because right now the only offering they have in that price range is the old MacBook Air. What that looks like, I think, is kind of what all these stories are sort of circling, is that a MacBook Air refresh? Is that a new MacBook? Is this a semantic issue? Is this an issue of naming, or is it an issue of what this computer actually looks like? And I it'd be good for education, but I'm not sure that this is their primary focus in education either. So it doesn't surprise me that they wouldn't announce it here. If they're thinking about it more as a consumer focused laptop rather than purely sort of an education play, but I don't know.
Right. This is not an event Apple does if it's just about education, right? Like, it's not just about education. It's also, also there's a low cost iPad, or also there's a new laptop. So it lets them tell that story, but they're also going to sell them to anybody wants one.
I agree. I think that, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think if it had a big splash to make, maybe this wouldn't be the time or place for it to make it with a MacBook, but I don't know. You're right. It could easily have done it there if it was ready, but, you know, long story short, it wasn't ready. So we'll see it at some other point this year.
Probably not. He says probably not. And that's interesting, because that suggests to me that whoever Mark Gurman has as a source knows stuff, but is not in the final loop about what gets announced, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that leaves that, I'm gonna leave that door open there, that they could do it, because it's good. It's good storytelling. And also, if it's literally just a new version of the MacBook that's cheaper, I'm not sure that it needs... I mean, there's not going to be another event, right? It's going to be WWDC, and there's going to be lots of stuff at WWDC. So there is an argument that they could pre-announce it here, but say it's not shipping for a month or whatever.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
Or they could just do it by press release. But
ready has a lot of different connotations too, right? Like, ready as in finalized in design, ready as ready to be mass produced and shipped. Like, well, that's got a whole slew of options.
Yeah, ready
in there too.
Probably not ready in time for next week. I mean, the suggestion there is that something is not there where they have confidence that they could announce it, because it's not. What is that? Yeah, I'm not even sure. My assumption is ready in time for next week literally means it's not at a point in its product development cycle where they could announce it next week.
Right.
but which may mean that it's not ready to ship next week nor next month, but it might be many months, and we just don't know. We're just reading the tea leaves here. That's just Mark Gurman sometimes supplies some leaves. And then we brew a tea,
and we drink that tea.
And then we read the leaves that Mark Gurman brought us.
And then we read the leaves.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to Chicago, though. I will tell you that. That's my Monday evening. And then that's my all Tuesday is Apple event and podcast. I'll do an upgrade afterward. And then... and then after that, it's just a matter of how much time I have before I go to the airport. So I might try to see a friend or something, or I might just work a little bit and then hop in a car or hop on a train and go to the airport. But
we were trying to decide what to do about the rebound because our normal recording time is noon on Tuesdays, noon Eastern on Tuesdays.
Oh, yeah.
So that's like an hour into this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, either we push it back or maybe it's only an hour. Who knows? We just start, you know, live commenting while we're on our show.
That'll be great.
Everyone loves that. Everybody loves that. So it's interesting. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we'll have something concrete.
Something to talk about.
The tea leaves get tiring after a while.
Yeah, they get a little bitter.
I drink a lot of tea, but
get a little bitter if you leave them in there too long to steep. You gotta
not unlike me. I also get a little bitter if you leave me in there too long.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So it looks like the weather. I was looking at Chicago weather because I got really concerned that it was going to be bad. And it sounds like there might be some rain, but it's not going to be like snowing or anything like that. So it's just going to be kind of chilly and
windy.
Rainy.
Yeah,
yeah.
So that's kind of what it does there.
Yeah, I think the Windy City is not because it's actually windy there, but because the politicians are gas bags.
That said, if you do go walk down right by Lake Michigan, it is quite windy.
Sure.
So parts of it are windy. But yeah, there are probably a number of reasons behind that particular nickname. But yeah, it's a nice city.
Mm.
I'm scheduled to go there in August, I think, for a wedding. So...
Oh, interesting. It's the, let's see, that Windy City was first referred to in the New York Sun in 1893 and referred to the leaders of Chicago who were complaining about the World's Fair or something like that. It sounds like there's plenty of wind to go around in Chicago. At least nobody is making claims, as far as I can tell, that people are just like eating a lot of burritos in Chicago. And
that's Beantown.
The breaking Windy City.
We'll hold on to that.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, Beantown is a perfect
nobody
place
uses
for a burrito.
That. Yeah. Beantown, you can fly Beantown to Frisco.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not?
Sure, direct.
They'll direct, yeah. Those are things that people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if I have anything else. I don't know what else is going on.
All right. Here, I got one. Okay. That this is also as long as we're reading some tea leaves, I kind of like this story because this is a perennial favorite, which is there was an analyst report saying that Apple is going to launch a foldable iPhone 2 years from now, according to a Bank of America analyst. I'm not sure I buy this even remotely, but I love the fact that foldable phones keep coming back as sort of this holy grail of things. And I understand why, because sooner or later you start dealing with these sheer limitations of size, right? Like the fact that you can only make a phone so big before it's a tablet. And
right.
The idea of like, but at the same time, because the screen is both a display surface and a user interaction surface, maximizing the area that's available is pretty smart. It's kind of what people want to do. That's why phones have gotten larger. And so basically people, I think, see foldable phones as kind of the best of both worlds, right? Like it's compact when you want it to be and it's large when you want it to be. And so you can watch stuff on a bigger screen or have a more tablet-like experience, but also fold down for a more compact model.
Right.
I'm not sure this will ever materialize in the way that people think it's going to. But yeah. I do think it's interesting in the way that it gets at that issue. So it's, I mean, and this is claiming that they're going to launch it in 2020, which seems, I don't think the technology is there yet. As they point out, the iPhone X does use an OLED display that is flexible, and parts of it are sort of tucked underneath, which is kind of interesting. But there are, as you know, many of these stories have also pointed out, there's way more that you have to figure out beyond just how to bend a screen, right? Like, that's in some ways your easiest solution is, yeah, OLED screens are actually flexible, but you got a crap ton of other stuff that goes into your phone that doesn't really like bending, as everybody from will remember from the iPhone 6 bending, getting annoyed about that.
Yeah, it's I always wonder about, like, the borders, the edges, the fold, basically. It's like, who wants a fold in there? In their display, I could see if that technology is that magical that literally it doesn't get a crease, then that's awesome. But I've also seen some people speculate that it's that you could do screens that are that actually roll up, like a shade, a window shade or something like that, where the idea is that you would have it and then you would kind of like, or like a scroll, and you'd pull it open and it would be bigger. And it would be in the bigger orientation, and then you push it back in.
Did you ever see, what was the terrible TV show? I think it was it was a Gene Roddenberry show.
Earth Final Conflict?
Yes, Earth Final Conflict.
Earth Final Conflict.
They had their little communicators were like a slim like cylinder, and you pulled the screen out from under it. I always remember that. I was like, it's a cool design on a sci-fi show, but, you know, in the same reason that we don't have Minority Report displays, like, turns out there are practical reasons you don't want to do that.
Well, and the answer might actually be that you have two displays, and it's a little bit like the old slider phones, that you've got a phone that's got another screen that's on the back, or that you flip it open, and then your keyboard goes down there, and your data goes over here. You've got two little mini displays, or whatever. I don't know. I get it. I get the idea that one way to save... I watched a science video the other day, and it was about how you get an object. You've got it's like a piece of paper with a square cut in it, and then you've got a circle that you're supposed to pass through it, and the circle is way bigger than the hole. So the answer is you can't. Except if you fold the piece of paper, it passes right through. And the idea there is that you're using the third dimension to change the topology of the piece of paper, and that space escapes into an alternate dimension, a third dimension, and then the other object can pass through it. And I was thinking about that in terms of tech, that it's the same idea. Like, what you really want to do is maximize that screen area when you want it, but minimize the amount of, you know, I can't put an iPad. I love an iPad screen, but I can't put it in my pocket.
Right.
And so, you know, there could be all sorts of wacky ways to do it that are not what we think of as foldable, right? But when you mention bendable, or the things like like a scroll or a shade, where you're using a third dimension to kind of like hide portions of it and then only display them, but they're not necessarily like folded like a sheet of paper. I don't know. I see the appeal of, because people want big screens, but people don't have huge pockets. I don't know whether that actually ever comes to pass, or whether this is the argument. This is a version of the argument about if you could have a phone that's as fast and smart as, you know, and good as your computer is, why would you need a computer anymore? You could just have the phone beam onto screens, which I think is a good argument. But the counter argument is, at that point, why would you not just have all of your data sync and have all the devices be intelligent and be right? Like, you don't need them to be dumb devices at that point. They can all be smart.
Well, it's the multiple solutions to the same problem, in the same way that I think that the foldable screen idea runs up against something like, say, smart glasses, right? Because if you have a screen on your glasses, it's much closer to your eyes, it's much larger in your perception, but it doesn't need to be physically large.
Exactly. So, and this is, I think, this is the way that science fiction gets technology wrong most of the time.
Right.
Is they get the anticipation right. And they look at the current technology, and they do an extrapolation. And I think when science fiction gets technology wrong, most of the time, it's because they're extrapolating forward and missing that one sidestep that takes you to a different, you know, a totally different right. destination. That they make the assumptions and they miss, like, yes, that is what people want, but they're not going to get it in that straight line. They're going to diagonal just a little bit. And that's the same idea, I think, of like, oh, a bigger screen, or, and then maybe the answer is, or no, maybe it's nothing and it's just shooting into your eye and it looks like a screen, but it's not.
Yeah, I mean, I always laugh at you go back and read classic science fiction and all the classic science fiction that goes to the moon but doesn't predict the internet. And you're like, yeah, I mean, that made sense from where you were. Oh. If you were writing in the 60s, everybody was going to space, and that made a lot of sense. Clearly, we would end up with colonies on the moon and Mars. But nobody was thinking about the fact that, well, we built a lot of really powerful computers to help send things to the moon. Maybe that will divert more energy into that.
I have been fascinated by whenever I watch the original Star Trek, which I've seen, you know, dozens and dozens of times every episode because I grew up with it. When I watch the original Star Trek now, one of the things that I'm struck by is how many technology things they got right or influenced. That's the other thing that happens with that show. Mm-hmm. But also the very specific things that they got wrong. So like, it was an era of mainframe computers. And so the Enterprise has a centralized computer, which for a while seemed silly, now seems smarter, and I suspect at some point may seem silly again, but right now it
keeps looping around.
It's sort of smarter. But the thing that kills me is that they have Sneakernet, that even though they've got a centralized system that knows everything, they still have those little pieces of wood that they call like data tapes or data cartridges that Spock is like, you know, Spock is sticking one in a slot and clicking a button, which at the time was super futuristic, like, wow. And now we think of it as like it's external storage. But once you've got the cloud, basically, you don't have like little cards with different, you know, I don't have eight memory cards laying on my desk.
It's security. You can't trust that network. You gotta physically walk those documents.
Yeah, there's a lot of headcanon I can try for that, but it really doesn't.
Well, Picard with the stack of pads.
That's what
right?
I was going to mention. Is the pad prefigures the iPad. It's brilliant on Star Trek:
Smart.
The Next Generation.
It's almost smart.
Except then he's got eight of them on his desk. It's like, why would you need eight pads?
In his spare time, he's a tech reviewer, and he has to try out all the different models.
Yeah, maybe so. It's like each of them only has their own thing on them, so I need eight of them from eight different departments. Maybe it's the bureaucracy. Maybe that's what causes it. The people in the science division are like, no, we can't use the pads that are used by the engineering division. That those guys don't know. So we got our own, and then Picard is the only one who has to deal with all of them, right? They all report up to him, and so he's got, all right, which one is this? Where's the menu on this one? Is this a science one? Oh, no, this is the medical one. Oh, that's totally different. And it's just, that's one of the hard things about being a captain. That's what I'm saying.
It's tough. There's a lot of management, a lot of overhead.
Anyway, there is an argument I could make about our jobs. And the fascination of everybody who's listening to this, which is what we're doing is we're watching science fiction in very, 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 very slow motion, which is how is the future created? And I mean, that's the truth of it, is like, how is the future created? The internet, smartphones, things like that are like, you know, they have completely changed our world. They really have. And we got to watch it happen, which is pretty cool. So what's the next one? That's the question. Will the world change next Tuesday? Stay tuned. It probably won't. But you never know.
I mean, maybe
incrementally.
Like a small amount.
Incrementally, yeah. Well, there will be, I will say, the future may change on Tuesday in the sense that perhaps if there's a lower cost iPad and that iPad gets Apple into more schools and there are, you know, and then it's influencing the way kids think, and then those kids will grow up and their life in education using those iPads will perhaps send them on a different trajectory. I mean, every small change in the present can lead to huge change in the future. It's just that most
small,
of them don't.
Cheap iPad tomorrow could lead to moon colonies 20 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
Moon colonies. All right. Well, on that note, on the note of the moon colony, I think we will say goodbye, and I will be back next week from Chicago to tell you all about what happened. Maybe like I'll answer the big mysteries of like what I had for dinner in Chicago. That everybody wants to know that. Boy, did he have the hot dog or the Italian meat sandwich?
Or the pizza.
Or the deep dish pizza. That's good stuff, too. Yeah. Well, that'll be a cliffhanger. Also, we'll talk about whatever is new, because that will be interesting, too. But until then, thanks to everybody out there for subscribing and letting us keep doing this. And bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.